Yes! Daniel, you are outdoing yourself this evening already. It's unbelievable. It's crazy how just playing one song can set the mood for the entire evening. Isn't it just it's a phenomenal thing. And if you're listening, you are not listening to just your average radio show. You're not listening to a mix. You're not listening to Casey Kasem's top, 40? Top 40. You are listening to apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. And guys, I just want to say a big thank you to you. You who are listening right now, whether you're driving home, sitting at work, if you're laying in bed, if you're sitting up just wondering and pondering the things that we wonder and ponder. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we really want to hear from you because you guys make the show. And you can give us a call and we'd love to interact with you. You can give us a call at 888-995-5552. That's 888-995-KKLA. And we really want to hear from you because tonight is our fifth. Is it Saturday or Friday?
Fifth Saturday.
It's Saturday. I think it's Friday.
Well, we consider it Friday, but you know, when we're all together like this, it is the fifth Saturday.
But I haven't gone to bed yet, and the world revolves around me.
The only states that it's not Saturday in are Hawaii and Alaska.
Ooh, how very American of you. What about all our international friends? No, yeah, you're right. No, it's really funny because I was talking to somebody online and I do some stuff for Stand to Reason and we go live and a woman joined us on the live broadcast from Okinawa or somewhere and she's coming from the future. Ooh. It was tomorrow today, which is like so cool to think of.
Yeah.
And before we go too far down into a rabbit hole, guys, my name is John Noyes and I'm here with some amazing folks. I've got Harry Edwards.
Hello. Good morning or good evening.
Whatever you want to do, man, you just commit. All right, Harry, you got to commit to one.
It's good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Dr. Leslie Wickman.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, Dr. Wickman. And Mr. Doctor. No, you're not a doctor, but I could say that because nobody would know otherwise.
I play a doctor on TV.
You do play it. You don't play a doctor. You have a face for radio.
I do.
Yes, you do. No, you're a beautiful man. And your wife is a lucky woman. Mr. Eric Horn.
Good morning.
And it's just a privilege to be here. Every fifth weekend, whenever there's a fifth weekend of the month, the apologetics.com hosts like to get together as much as we can and do a show kind of together. And what we do is we recap what's happened since the last time we were all together. And gosh, I feel like it's been forever.
Wow, that's true.
I don't even remember the last time. This is Eric's, I think, first
this
time.
This is my first time here, yeah.
Yikes.
And officially, we've not really gotten all together, like, you know, with all of us. It's been not all of us.
Yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah, it's absolutely been crazy. It's been like two or three of us, but not all of us. Yeah. And tonight's no exception because Jason isn't here.
Yeah.
So if you guys normally listen to Jason, if he's like your preferred host, you're going to have to deal with us tonight. But that's okay because we love Jesus too. So yeah, guys. And again, I really want you guys to call in if you're listening. You guys make the show. Really, you guys do. And I know that you guys are wrestling with stuff because we all wrestle with intellectual doubts, spiritual doubts. What does the Bible mean when it says this? And how can we go deeper into our faith? I know you guys are wrestling with that. So give us a call at 888-995-5552. 888-995-5552. And with that, Harry, man, what have you guys been talking about the last month or two?
Yeah, no, we've been talking about something very important. And I feel like the church has not really woken up to it, so to speak, to keep their blinders on. And that's the topic of deconversion.
Whoa!
So, I know it's the opposite of the Great Commission and
deconversion.
Deconversion.
You should have broached this subject before the show.
You didn't know that, right?
I didn't know that we were going to talk about this.
So, anyways, we did two sessions of that, and we took a lot of the content from John Marriott's book, A Recipe for Disaster. And check this out: the subtitle alone should really concern us.
What's it say?
It says, four ways churches and parents prepare individuals to lose their faith and how they can instill a faith that endures.
Eric likes this subject. Eric's like, oh, I think his heart just stopped.
No, that's true. So when we look at all of the societal ills that's going on right now, and I've had this feeling for a while, but I kind of like what John Marriott brings to the table and does a lot of good research on this. I would encourage everybody to, especially Christian leaders and pastors, to get a copy of his book, A Recipe for Disaster.
Okay, so what's the main premise?
Yeah, so he identifies four factors that contribute to people losing their faith, essentially, and those four are he labels them over preparation. I'll explain that in a minute. Under,
yeah, just too much Jesus, right? I mean, because you can have too much of that.
Yeah. So over preparation, under preparation, ill prepared, and painfully prepared. So real briefly, and we can talk about this. Like you said, over prepared is when churches or parents they turn out to be legalistic on this, and they will say, all right, you have to believe XYZ, all of these things. And then when a young person grows up, they start thinking for themselves and they go, I'm not sure I can agree with all of these things. And then they begin to lose their faith. And then the church will say, well, if you can't check off on all of these things, you're not a Christian. So that's very discouraging, right? The under preparation is just the opposite of it. So maybe watered down Christianity, and a good example would be like the Bart Ehrmans of this world. So let's say we're not talking about a higher criticism at church, or just the stuff that is taught seminaries, which in my opinion ought to be taught from the pulpit. Mm-hmm. So when they go to college or in the science area, right, we're we're inoculating our kids with just a particular view, they hear a different view that's viable. They go, why didn't I learn about that?
Yeah, that's especially true with the sciences.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. That's right. So that's underprepared. The ill-prepared is just false teaching that's going on in the church. Maybe how they teach certain important doctrines of the faith, like the Trinity or dual natures of Christ, or maybe we just get it wrong. We have false analogies and poor metaphors. And so when young people, when they get smarter, they go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. So then that causes doubt, right? Because the church teaches one thing and then it just does not reconcile, let's say, with reason, right? Mm-hmm. To me, the fourth one is the most painful. And John Marriott aptly names it painfully prepared. And that's when churches have double standards, for lack of a better term. You know, they will... for instance, the LGBT issue. So we say marriage, super important. But what's going on with the divorce rates, right?
Mm-hmm. Or how are we moving towards providing healthy, or examples are training for healthy marriages and stuff like that. Yeah, interesting.
So anyway,
I like that.
Yeah, so it's terrible, and the person gets hurt. Or here's a good example, and then I'm going to end my portion here. But this might be embarrassing to admit, but I was watching a documentary on the Jonas Brothers. Okay, I'm not a fan, but
I'm
thought,
probably the only person here who has no idea.
Seriously, come on.
They were big.
Do you guys
10
know
years
who the
ago.
Jonas Brothers okay. are?
No, they were huge. All right, they were huge.
Nick Jonas?
12 years ago. Yeah, see, you know, yeah.
12 years ago?
I don't even think I was a Christian. You work with young people, right?
I mean, sometimes.
Okay. They were huge.
Do the young people know who Jonas Brothers are?
They would. No. But anyways, get this. So they were just a regular family, church-going family. Their dad was a pastor. But these three brothers, they were talented. So they started, you know, doing music and all that, and they get discovered, all right? And they get picked up by Sony. And they're like preteens, they're teenagers, right? They wanted to protect their dad's reputation because he was a pastor at the time, so they kept it silent. Can you imagine the pressure on these kids? Once they became bigger and they couldn't
hide
it,
they kept it silent.
They kept it a secret.
Like they're recording records for Sony, and they were like,
"That's right." They were keeping it hush hush.
If you're a Jonas brother and you're listening to this program, I really need you to call in right now 888-995-KKLA.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, I know. Do it seriously. But and I felt bad for them. And then when they couldn't keep it a secret anymore because they were really getting big, the church kicked them out.
Nice.
Wow.
And because they were expected to be a Christian band. but they weren't a Christian. They were a clean group, Lord. Right? So the church kicked them out.
So they don't do, like, in scare quotes, Christian music. They mm-hmm. just do music.
That's right. They just do music.
So how do you, like, this is like a whole nother thing, man.
Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, they struggled for a while because they were really in the beginning stages of this. So it's not like they were super big, but the churches found out they were signed by a label. And they go, oh, it's not a Christian band, you know. Kick them out. Father's jobless. Wow.
Kick them out of the church.
Wow. Kicked them out of the church and lost their home.
How many of those people had Christian jobs?
Yeah.
You know? I know. I mean, like seriously. I mean, oh, my gosh, the hypocrisy.
So it's terrible. So I don't know. I was watching the documentary. I haven't finished it yet, but...
Where is this documentary? Is it on Netflix? Tell me it's on...
Yeah, oh, it's on Netflix, yeah.
Yes, I know Jonas, what I'm doing on the way home.
Oh, I felt really bad. I mean, these were teenagers, and they had high anxiety over this. They, you know, do we keep it a secret? You know, because our dad might get fired.
And you said they're young.
They were young. Yeah, young. They were like 13. And
this corresponds with the...
Painfully prepared.
Painfully prepared. So I don't... So can you help just like before we move on? Like, what does that mean? Painfully prepared.
Yeah. So, like in this particular example with the Jonas Brothers, they couldn't understand why the church was, had that standard against them, just because they weren't doing Christian lyrics, and then all of a sudden, because of that, they would fire their dad, and sort of kick them out of the church. It's a small church, but still, that was their family. In fact, they lived. Next to the church, so they lost the father.
Yeah,
lost
they had a parsonage. Yeah,
that's right. And they lost the home, and they were homeless, just like that.
Well, but now they're like famous and rich, right?
It was so big. They were. So
Are they
big.
Still Christian?
See, that's the thing. I don't know. I haven't finished the documentary yet.
Oh, it's a cliffhanger. Yeah,
just leaving us tune in next week.
I don't know.
Hey guys, if you know if the Jonas Brothers are Christian, you got to call us.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we're dying to know. But don't spoil it for Harry. So we'll take Harry off.
So anyways, those things happen all the time, right? That, like I said, I was just surfing.
That's really interesting.
The channels, and I learned about them, and I go, oh my goodness, this is exactly what John Marriott's talking about.
So they were prepared for the world by the pain the church gave them. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they seem like ordinary, normal people, but just because the church had this, unbelievable standard. So apparently, if you're going to be a musician, you can only sing about Jesus.
Well, but like, what about a lawyer? Like the lawyers of the congregation, can they only litigate? Can they only litigate Christian? This is absurd.
Well, that's the thing. That's why it's an emotional thing, and
makes me feel bad.
Even in the sciences,
I feel bad
right?
for you, Jonas Brothers. Yeah. I feel bad for you.
Yeah,
give me a call. We'll help you.
Yeah, that's true.
Process the pain.
They were Christians.
That's a really interesting. Those are all really interesting. Those four categories. So if people want to re-listen to those and get into depth with that, they can track back and listen on the podcast.
It's titled Deconversion, Part 1 and Part 2. The Part 1, we had John Marriott, the author. So it was great.
Oh, wow.
And it was...
you had the author on?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And Jacob Daniel was hosting
everybody.
That.
He knows everybody.
Jacob Daniel's amazing.
He is. He's the man.
Yeah. When's he going to publish a book?
I don't know. Have him call us and tell us.
He's watching. I think he's watching right now, Jacob Daniel. He says he's going to publish a book next week. No, he said something about Jonas. I can't read that. Yeah, no. He said Nick Jonas had a Hindu wedding ceremony recently.
Oh, yeah. All right. See?
Jacob would know that.
He would know that. That's interesting. So it looks like they abandoned their Christian roots. Wow.
Well, maybe. I mean, painful. Who knows? You know, we do a lot of things for women.
It's true.
You know, I mean, we do a lot of things for girls. I found Jesus because of a girl. You know, I've done crazy things for the affections of a woman, and coming to Christ was really, like, I mean, not one of them, but you know what I mean? Like going to church. So who knows, who knows? God knows the story. So that sounds really interesting, man. Thank you for sharing
that.
Yeah. Wow.
I think Christian leaders ought to pick up the book. It's a discussion we need to have. Seriously. We talk about societal ills, culture going down and everything, but we need to...
Is culture going down?
I think so.
It's going down? I don't know, man.
Part of it is.
I don't know. I think it's, I don't know, dude. I look at the world around me and I'm I don't know. Anyways, that's a whole nother topic as well. Let's talk eschatology tonight. So it changes every other day, you know. Some days I'm mill, some
not
days I'm post-mill.
Pessimistic, but
today I think I might be post-mill. I feel good today. It's because I had I had lemon lift tea. So we're going to bring next before the break. We're going to get into the science issues that we talk about and Dr. Leslie Wickman. And I just want to throw it out there that if you guys are listening, you guys need to go to the American Scientific Affiliation's website,
ASA3.org.
Right. ASA, the number 3.org, and check it out. And this big conference coming up this summer. Yeah. And we mention it once a month on this show because we really are sold out on it. And Dr. Wickman is like the head honcho over there.
Yeah.
You make all the glorious things happen.
Well, I make some of them happen anyway. Yeah. We have a good team.
You do have a good team. And you guys work really hard to make sure you get a diverse view. A diverse group of people holding different views.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to be in Wheaton, Illinois.
That's right.
And
July 19th through the 22nd.
And you guys are talking about creation.
Yeah, exploring creation is our theme. So we have a great slate of plenary speakers. We have workshops on how to teach science in Christian high schools. We have another workshop on cross-disciplinary scholarship. And basically looking at expanding the discussion, even within our organization, beyond just the confines of the hard or natural sciences. Because by necessity, if you're talking about science and faith, you really need to have a theological understanding. You need to have a decent understanding of biblical interpretation. And also, since those of us that are discussing it come from our own kind of unique human experiences, we really need that, you know, context of, psychology as well as the social sciences. So we're really trying to kind of expand the disciplines represented in the ASA and get some cross-disciplinary, interdisciplinary scholarship going.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely great. And people can get involved with this stuff. They don't have to sit on the sidelines. They can go to Wheaton. They can participate in these. They can go to the plenaries. They can go to the breakouts.
Ask questions. Go to the workshops. Yeah.
They got
to
go.
Yeah, absolutely.
They got to go.
Yeah.
So ASA, the number 3.org.
Exactly.
You can't miss it. You can register right online.
Yeah.
And so what have we been talking about? I can't remember.
Well, we've been talking about a lot of different topics around the whole science and faith thing. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about whether we're alone in the universe.
That was a good one.
We've talked about...
What's the short answer to that?
It's not a short answer, but most people kind of fall in one of two camps. One is first of all, I should back up just to give kind of a foundation for this. And one of the toughest questions to answer that is very crucial in this conversation about whether we're alone or not is the idea of the origin of biological life. So how do you go from non-living material to living cells?
I know.
You do?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want to weigh in on that?
His name's God.
Okay.
How do you?
Fair enough. But anyway.
God it again.
God did it.
But
God did
it, anyway. Yeah.
Jesus.
So people fall in one of two camps, and there's the one camp that would say it's so incredibly complex, so many different things have to happen in order to go from non-life to life, that it's amazing that it even happened once. Okay, so that's one camp. The other camp, the other primary camp really says, well, it happened once, so it probably has happened.
It's like the opposite end of the spectrum.
Exactly. And the thing is, really, there's no philosophical or logical or rational basis for saying that, just because a sample of one is not statistically significant. And of course, the sample of one that they're referring to is the fact that it happened here on planet Earth.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
See, this is why Dr. Lickman and I never get through the topic on the show, because I ask stupid questions.
Like, because Columbo tactic.
I'm not trying. I'm not trying to lead the conversation. I'm truly engaged in the topic, and I'm wondering because this isn't my field.
Yeah. Sure.
So, but like when we say that's there's very little statistic relevance, really, because it's a sampling of one. Mm-hmm. But when we combine that with the research that we've done, with the complexity of life, and also in our pursuit to try to create life from non-life. I think that we see that it's complicated.
Well, exactly. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that you can't say, okay, we've got a sample size of one, and since it happened once, it probably has happened more than one. That's just completely irrational. But to say that, you know,
I get what you're saying.
If we say that, okay, we know that the complexity of life and to get from non-life to life is extremely improbable, because we know the steps that have to happen. We know the things that would have to come together, and the resources that would have to be available, the environment that would have to be available, and all those things. So we could get a better handle on the probability of that than to look at that sample of one and say, well, it happened once, it could happen again.
Yeah, that's right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
You don't even need to raise your hand.
No. Harry's
over here. He's raising his hand.
We're not in school.
I love it. That's
Harry's
awesome.
I'm going to ask a question.
Harry's like amazing.
Yeah. So anyways, maybe I'll play devil's advocate, and I don't believe this, but a common objection.
Leslie didn't push back at you. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. A common objection is this, and I'm curious, how would you respond to this? So, and I forget who. I wish I can quote the guy, but they always compare the whole, you know, from non-life to life as, like you said, an incredible thing. And then they'll compare it to the lottery. Someone has to win.
Oh, yeah. No. That's kind of a fallacy too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. How would you respond to something like that? I think I have some ideas, but I'm not the expert. I don't know if it's persuasive enough. But I mean, intelligent PhDs and scientists would say that's one way that they would explain the origins of life, right? They would say, it's like the lottery. Someone has to win, and someone does win.
But
right?
That's fallacious. You know, that's fallacious.
How would you respond to that?
Well, okay, so I would take it back to statistics. And if we look at statistical analysis, once you get beyond odds of about one chance in 10 to the 50th power, which is extremely remote, statisticians will even say, well, it goes from being extremely improbable to
virtually impossible.
Yeah, because
that's
just
really
too many things.
Number.
Yeah, too many things have to line up. And in fact, in this particular conversation, you know, some people will say, well, you know, they argue that, okay, well, we've got all these different universes. We live in a multiverse, and this is, of course, speculative too. But if we live in a universe, then maybe we've got an infinite number of chances to get everything just right. But even some of the origin of life scientists will say you'd need 10 to the 500th additional universes to see that happening one more time.
Which, and we need to understand how small that, I mean, I think I read somewhere that there's more zeros in that number than there are elemental particles in the universe.
Yeah.
You can't even write it down.
That's 10 to the 500th has 500 zeros beyond it.
That's a lot of zeros.
It is a lot of zeros. And I mean, one way to put that number in perspective is there are only 10 to the 80th atoms in this entire universe.
I think Dembski actually coined the phrase probabilistic resources. There aren't enough probabilistic resources for this life to come together.
Yeah.
So that's like combining, like you said, combining all of the atoms, molecules, time, chance, whatever. You mash it all together. There's not enough out there.
I know another way to get your brain around it, at least to kind of start in that direction, is if there are 10 to the 80th atoms in this universe, and imagine a multiverse where there are 10 to the 80th universes, one atom out of those 10 to the 80th universes, we're still only at one chance in 10 to the 160th. And so we're still not even close to this 10 to the 500th number, right? So
yeah, that's right.
So it's incredible. I mean, you can think, I mean, we know the universe is really big beyond our comprehension, but there are only, like, say, 10 to the 80th atoms in it.
Yeah.
That's a relatively small number.
It's insane.
It's incredible. Yeah.
It's insane. And we're going to leave the listeners on that note for our first break. And when we get back, I see, is it Rock that's waiting from Irwindale that has a question. So we'll hop into a question, and then maybe we'll talk about what Eric and I have been talking about on the air. How's that sound, guys?
Sounds sweet. Good to me.
So, hey, guys, if you're listening, this is KKLA. We are live, apologetics.com radio, and we're going to be back in, Daniel, 60 seconds? A little bit more than that is what he's telling me. So how about this? 62 and a half seconds.
Stick around.
We'll see you then. Or hear you then. I have absolutely no idea what song that is.
Petra.
Is that Petra? See, I missed out on all this Christian rock because I didn't become a Christian until I was an adult.
That kind of reminded me of the Electric Light Parade.
Yeah, it did, a little bit. That's what I thought it was kind of like. That's quite a guitar show right there, man. Did they have guitars that lit up?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, easy. Yeah. Hey, easy for me to say. At least I'm hosting tonight, you know?
That's right.
So, no, hey, guys, if you're listening, this is KKLA. You are listening live. What time is it? It's 12:30 on Saturday.
Saturday.
Morning, Friday evening for some of us. And it's great to be with you. My name is John. I'm hosting apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think. And one idea to push out to you guys is we are completely 100% listener supported. And we would love for you guys to hop online. All you got to do is go to apologetics.com. You'll see a donate button. Click that button. And we'd love to see your support, not just through your calls, but also financially. It's always kind of awkward when we ask for money, but it doesn't have to be, because I think we're doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and don't forget, we're all volunteers here. No one's getting paid. So your money goes a long
Wait,
way.
I'm not going to get paid?
Oh, you didn't know that, John?
Well, I've been waiting for 2 years. I've been waiting for that check. My wife is like, when are you getting paid? It's coming, babe. Don't worry.
It's going to diminish your reward in heaven. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So basically,
we make sure you're not paid.
It's going to diminish my reward in heaven. So, but the money does go towards, you know, improving and updating the website, keeping us on air here. But also, like, I mean, wouldn't it be really cool if we were able to raise enough money to get a prime time spot?
That'd be cool.
Replace Johnny Mac. Am I allowed to say that?
Probably not.
Daniel's like, no, don't say that. No, but you know, it'd be great if we could get like prime time and get in the game big time, because I think we have a lot of valuable personalities. Yeah. We have a lot of valuable answers, and it's really you guys that help us do that. And we would love to partner with you, and then you guys are able to make that happen by your financial contributions. So apologetics.com, click on donate, and it's also tax deductible.
Of course.
And we would really love to get those donations from you. And with that, so we were just talking about science stuff and probability, but we have a caller, and he's been waiting patiently on hold for 12 minutes, almost exactly. Wow. So we are going to go to Rock in Irwindale. Rock, are you with us?
Yeah, it's Brock, but that's okay.
It's Brock, not Rock, Daniel. It's okay, because no, Daniel's amazing. But you know what? I could call you The Rock, and then the whole thing changes, man.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, the whole thing changes. No, how are you doing? I see a question here that you have about what's the most convincing argument you have for faith? I'd like to hear it just maybe in your phrasing.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, is there, you know, a short, you know, maybe 1-2 minutes that can really kind of give somebody pause or cause to think. That would challenge, you know, kind of like just the generic indoctrinated, you know, scholastic worldview, and get them to, you know, seriously think that about Christianity, the claims of Christianity, that Christ is the only way.
Yeah, I love that. So you know what? I'm going to go around to everybody and get your 1, 2, or 3 minute answer to that. What's the most convincing argument you have faith? I'm going to start with Eric, just because you're smiling so big.
I knew you were going to start.
I haven't heard from you all show. You've been quiet, sitting in the corner.
It's been amazing. These guys.
Nobody puts Eric in the corner.
Oh,
Let's rock out.
Let's pass on me for right now.
Okay, we're gonna go to Dr. Wickman.
Okay, love it. I don't know if I could narrow it down to just one, but I guess I'd start with the cosmological argument and the fact that anything that begins to exist must have a cause for its existence, which, you know, is, I wrote the book on God of the Big Bang.
She did write, literally wrote the book.
That's awesome.
The God of the Big Bang.
And
Google it. We're not lying.
Yeah, and I mean, and that was partly why I chose that title, is because I think it's just so convincing, is the fact that our universe had a beginning and therefore it requires a beginner. So that's one of my favorite arguments.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And can I throw in a second one?
What do you, hey, Brock, you want a second one?
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the second one I would throw out there is the teleological argument, which basically says that evidence for design basically says that there must be a purposeful designer behind it. And everywhere we look in the created order, there's just, you know, all this synergy and precision and things that have to be exactly the way they are. If we tweak anything, everything falls apart and the possibility of life goes away.
I love it. That's like fine tuning.
Exactly. The fine tuning argument, teleological argument, Goldilocks principle. It all goes.
I love it.
Hand in hand.
Two scientific arguments from the scientist.
Two for one today.
Two for. Love it. Soon to be Dr. Harry Edwards someday.
Wow. All right, someday. A
couple years.
Yeah. So I'm not a...
they should just give you a degree at Biola.
Yeah, because I've been there forever. So I'm no scientist or I'm not a professional philosopher, but my favorite, I'll give you two. I like discussion, so I'd always ask them. So this is kind of non-confrontational too. And but it's kind of like in your face, because I would say, have you considered the truth claims of Jesus? Or have you considered the truth claims of Christianity?
Mm.
So just by saying that, you're suggesting pretty explicitly that it's true. You know, there's true claims. It's not just how do you feel about X, you know? Have you considered the truth claims of Christianity? Or have you considered Jesus's teachings? So to me, when I say those kinds of things, it's a question, and they can say yes or no, and then the conversation can happen after that. And you can insert a lot of apologetics after that, right? I mean, a lot of holidays, those are appropriate things to say, but I am specific on the truth claims of Christianity. I would say those that phrasing.
I like it.
Good answer.
And then another thing that's persuasive to me, at least
Family Feud.
For
good answer.
Yeah. What helped me personally is, and if you're not familiar with this, you can just Google it. But it's Pascal's Wager. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not an argument, but it's a wisdom.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a wisdom thing, because you can say just based on Pascal's Wager. And he, you know, Pascal made it, Blaise Pascal made this popular. So that's why it's named after him. You can say if the belief that God is true, God exists is true, and you disbelieve it, then you lose everything. If God does exist and you believe it, then you gain everything. So, but the negation of that, you don't lose anything. Let's say God is God exists and happens to be false, and you believe him, you actually don't lose anything.
Yeah.
So to me, the one, it tips the scale to, well, just believe him, because you stand to gain everything and you lose nothing if that belief is false.
Yeah. It's the best bet, right?
It's the best bet. That's why it's a wager. And we're all betting, because you know what? Guess what? We will all die.
Harry's a betting man.
So we will all die. So I would bet on the fact that God exists. And see, that's not even a far-out proposition, that God exists, right? Mm-hmm. And if we're really honest with ourselves, we probably really believe that. And people who say they don't, you have to be introspective a little bit and maybe be honest with yourself and say why. Is it because it's some emotional thing, an anger thing or something? But come on, really, you know, like Leslie was saying, all of these things can't just pop into existence with no reason.
Yeah.
Can I jump on the heels of that?
One of the things as a scientist, you know, and as an instructor of science, I often tell my students that science is basically looking for the best explanation given the evidence that we have today. I mean, that's how the scientific method proceeds. It's an inductive process. We're stacking up evidence for a particular hypothesis or theory. And so we're looking for the best explanation given the evidence that we have today. And so I would apply the same approach to the evidence for faith. You know, what is the best explanation given all of the evidence that we see, both in the physical world as well as the spiritual world, in human history, in the great books, the various scriptural traditions of different religions? What is the best explanation? And as Alistair McGrath says, Christianity provides the best explanation for the big picture of reality.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That's good. I'm gonna go back to Eric Horn here.
Yeah. So for me personally, the truth.
Just for our listeners, I just want to recap that we're talking because Brock, you're still on the line, right?
Oh yeah.
Brock is here. He's taking notes and he's loving it. But we're talking about Brock is calling us from Irwindale, and he's asking what's the most convincing argument that we kind of have for our faith. And I'm going to throw it over to Eric Horn and see what he has to say. Sorry, I cut you off, man.
That's okay. No, I completely lost my mind.
Oh, my gosh. No, God doesn't exist anymore.
I ran out of the building. So for me, it's more of a man, look around, right? There's so much. There's objective truth.
That's good.
There are things that cultures share amongst each other, and nothing can really explain that. But this unity is creation of God. It's that, and then Jesus's words about what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. Not that the Bible is a book of rules of do's and don'ts, but he talks a lot about a lot of the things he says that's wrong with society or wrong with people are that they're selfish, they're inward looking, they don't follow the right thing, and we're really built to follow something. And if you really think about how your life goes. I mean, think about what you've done in your life. You're always following. You're always pursuing something, right? We're built to pursue God, and that's what my faith is. My faith is that following God and following Jesus is the right thing.
That's good. I like it, man. Chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever.
Yes,
that's absolutely. Well, hey, Brock, if you're going to ask me, and I'm nobody, but I would say the most convincing argument for my faith is the resurrection of Jesus. And I think it's that simple. It actually kind of goes back. It goes back to what Leslie was pointing out. You know, it's even a scientific argument now, not science in the traditional sense of the word, but you know, historically, in the historic sense. You know, history is a science. It's the best. What's the best explanation for the evidence that we have around the resurrection? What single hypothesis are we going to come up with to explain the multiple pieces of evidence, whether it be the empty tomb, the almost certain death of Jesus on a cross, the appearance of what the disciples would characterize as an appearance of a risen Jesus, appearance individually, multiple attestations to it.
But John, don't we need to believe the Bible before we can?
No, because I didn't. and this for me, coming from an atheistic perspective, was the most convincing argument for me. And so once I started, literally I was sitting on my couch. I can remember this. I had a little IKEA couch. It was white. It was one of those really uncomfortable ones that folded down to a futon. And I used to read in it because it was impossible to fall asleep in the stinking thing. So I'd read in this thing. And I remember wrestling with these ideas and as an atheist and starting to kind of try to come up with a universal hypothesis that explained the evidence in light of itself. I remember thinking in my mind, well, aliens could have. And right when I said aliens, I said, oh, if I'm willing to say aliens to avoid a God hypothesis here, there's a serious problem with my worldview. Like, I'm willing to say anything. And then dominoes quickly fell from there. And then I had a close second to the resurrection. The argument for the historicity of the resurrection was the existence of a moral reality, mm-hmm. that we live in a world that is fundamentally moral in mm-hmm. nature. And as an atheist, I couldn't, when I was honest with myself, I couldn't ground my morals. And not only could I not ground my morals, but I couldn't live a life apart from those morals. So even as best as I tried, I still loved people. I still wanted to be kind to people. I still wanted to treat people right. I didn't want to lie. I didn't want to steal. I didn't want to cheat. And I knew those things were wrong. Mm-hmm. And my worldview couldn't carry the weight of that because it was shallow. And so but those things were the best arguments for me, Brock. How'd we do?
That was a great answer.
Oh, wow. That was amazing. I do have kind of two questions, and I'm actually got like three things in my mind going on, but
I want to
ask the questions first. If somebody can be reasoned in, can they be reasoned out by, you know, somebody more persuasive, like a Dawkins or something like that in the future?
Okay. Is that the question?
At the moment.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to stay out of this for right now, but I'm going to preface this that the answers depend upon your theology. So I'm going to go to Harry Edwards first, because I wonder where you are on this.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what I mentioned a while ago about deconversion. And John Marriott, the author of this book, did make room for that discussion by saying actually that part of that whole Calvinism or non-Calvinism idea is not part of the discussion. It's important to note whether once saved, always saved, or if you have more of an Arminian kind of a view, that you have to still consider the kinds of attacks that and counter-arguments that we receive and are persuaded by them to deconvert. That's still an issue, you know? So if we're going to go with John Marriott's thesis, there are many ways that people deconvert. It's the four factors that I mentioned a while ago. So they are persuasive. Like, for instance, Bart Ehrman deconverted, right? Bart Ehrman's a famous one because he was taught that there are no errors whatsoever in Scripture, and it was unqualified, just no errors. But when you study textual criticism, that view changes, and he was very distraught over the fact that
I prefer the term variance.
Harry. Yeah, exactly.
Makes me feel better.
There you go. But you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
So
I'm joking.
Yeah. So, anyways, those kinds of things are persuasive, especially when you have someone like him saying there's thousands and thousands of errors in Scripture, right?
So it's interesting, though. I think, you know, in some of the information that you're presenting earlier, I would have to argue that the faith that the people who deconverted was not based on reason initially.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
That's right.
And so
they were the underprepared group. Yeah.
And Brock's question really was, you know, if you can be reasoned into faith, can you be reasoned out? And I would, like I say, I would argue that what was missing in those people that left the faith was a reasonable faith to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think, Eric, I'd like to hear from you. Do you want to participate in this? And then I'll give my two cents.
Yeah, I might say something controversial.
That's go for it. Shocking.
All right, we have the 7-second delay on?
Yeah, they got a thumbs up.
So I was going to say that I don't know that reason gets us in or out. I would say that reason, and I just kind of wrote something down here, reason doesn't get you in. It only exposes the possibility of belief.
Yeah.
And the Holy Spirit is what brings you in. And
high five. Up over the mic.
But at the same time, we are not called to a blind faith.
No.
That's right.
Exactly. So you, for a thinking person, I think that those obstacles have to be removed, and so you have to realize or believe that it's reasonable to have faith, and then the faith may come separately or after that
or before.
Maybe. I don't know.
So I want to let you finish your answer here.
That was pretty much it.
That's pretty much
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
To me, I'd just say it's not contra faith. You know, reason is not contra faith.
Right.
No.
They work together. Yeah.
It clears. I like what you said. It kind of clears out the obstacles, right. So that you can see what the Holy Spirit is doing, or maybe the Holy Spirit. That part I get a little fuzzy on, like, exactly how that works, but.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anybody here that would disagree with the idea, Brock, that salvation, the gift of salvation, the gift of faith, it's a gift given mm-hmm. to us by God. It's a supernatural event where God takes a hard heart and He makes it a heart of flesh, and so that holy is a work of God. It has nothing to do. In that regard, in my opinion, according to my theology, it has nothing to do with necessarily an argument. Now, along the lines of what Leslie, Dr. Wickman was saying, is that I think one of the wonderful things about apologetics is it fills in the potholes for people so they can drive down the road a little bit more smoothly. So we can show that we have reason. You know, we see this throughout Scripture. We see Jesus modeled it himself. We see Paul modeling it himself. We mm-hmm. see Peter modeling it. I mean, it's modeled everywhere. Where Paul goes and gives a testimony as to why he believes, you know, when he's in the Areopagus, right? I mean, he's fully showing people that's a reasonable. This is a reasonable belief,
right.
And not only is it a reasonable belief, but it best explains reality.
Right.
But the idea for me that like our faith is waxing and waning according to when we catch somebody, I just don't think it's biblical. I think that I actually like the distinction that you drew, Harry. And I don't know if it was pronounced enough that there's a difference between the question I think that Brock is asking: can you argue into the faith? Can somebody be argued out of the faith? It's different than the once saved, always saved discussion. Mm-hmm. I think that it's maybe even I'm not saying lesser as far as priority or quality, but it's a lesser. It's underneath that.
Yeah. And I'm with you all, when you combine all of what we're saying, I think we all agree on this. Like, theologically, I mean, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm a Calvinist. I'm more Reformed in my thinking. So if Jesus saves you from the beginning of time, right, that's it. You can't, nothing can take you away from that. I mean, that's scriptural. So, and like I think you said, Eric, that it's not reason that saves you. We know that. Mm-hmm. It's really the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
But
it's not, again, it's not contra reason is what I'm going to say. You know, faith and reason go together.
Just to build on his question, can we be saved still and not believe that we're saved? Be convinced that we're not saved.
In my thinking, you can be saved, and nobody knows it except God. And then
right.
upon your confession, that's when you just realize you're saved. But you had been saved. You know, that's my soteriology. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Brock, how'd we do? Confuse you even more?
May I just comment my two cents a little bit?
No. Yeah. Of course you can, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. A lot of different. Things kind of popped up. Paul said that the unbeliever, you know, is without excuse in that, you know, we're created, right? And there's a creator, and, you know, all mm-hmm. of the cosmos bear witness to that. And so then it, you know, gets someone to think, right? And so I think that's like kind of the, you know, what you're saying is you're not, you know, sticking your head in the proverbial sand about God, you know, using, you know, whatever, arguments are to, you know, believe and exercise your faith against God, you know, and then, okay, so maybe now they're open to the possibility of God, that kind of thing. The other thing was just, as far as, you know, my understanding of faith right now is that when you believe, you're giving, you know, yourself, if that makes sense. You're desiring the exchange. And so you've entrusted your soul to a faithful creator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you believe the account. And so then, you know, like, I guess what I'm getting at is there's a mental assent to the facts and even Christianity, and yet there may not be, dare I say, a conversion. Demons believe and tremble.
Yeah, so, you know, that, So, Brock, that's why I was just about to say that. I'd actually, and I think you have it inverted. I think the mental ascent only comes after you've been given the gift of faith. I think that God removes the veil from your eyes, and that's the only way you're able to understand the evidence. You know, you started off by mentioning Romans 1, which I think is a basis for this understanding. For since the creation of the world, you know, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power in the Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And the they is the unbeliever there. See, and right before that, in verse, 18, 16, somewhere in there, that they were suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. So people know this truth. They know it just like the demons know the truth. They've come to the mental ascent. The mental ascent is there, but they're not able to realize that until God removes that veil and makes that hard heart a heart of flesh, and then we're able to actually understand that. Later on, Paul's going to write that to the Gentiles the cross is foolishness, right? And to the Jew it's a stumbling block. And so until your eyes are opened, you can't understand these things, even though mentally you can understand them. I can explain crucifixion to somebody. I can give somebody all, and I've done it all the time. I'm the only Christian in my family. Like, I mean, my wife's Christian. My kids are Christian. We just baptized them last week. Yes. But, I can explain till I'm blue in the face the historicity of the resurrection, and I can win the discussion, but they're never going to understand the implications that has for them in their life, spiritual life, physical life, earthly life, until they're given the gift of faith. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, you know, God's going to soften the heart and do that. And then, you know, in the Old Testament, for me, it was prophecy. Like, how do you explain prophecy? Like, I mean, literally, you know, I mean, like, you know, Jesus is the promised Messiah, and then you go from there. You know, it's like there's no other person in the history of forever that could, you know, be this person, and then Jesus is a historical figure at the exact time. Okay, yeah. So now what are you going to do? You know, kind of thing.
And I would actually lump that in. I was going to lump that in with my discussion about the resurrection, because I think if you add, so you add the historicity of the resurrection, you know, the 15 or so, what's Habermas's technique? Minimal facts, but then you start applying prophecy to minimal facts, and I think it just lights out. And but I think it all culminates in an act of God. So we we are called to destroy speculations that are raised, every lofty idea that's raised up against the things of God. Right, that's what we're to do. Our battle is not a physical battle; it's an intellectual battle for sure. So that's why I think apologetics is so important. However, the idea of the actual like we don't argue people into the kingdom necessarily. We provide good reasons for people to believe, and then we'll know what we do. We trust God. I love Kokel's saying on this. Greg Kokel, he's at Stand to Reason, and he says that our job is to put a stone in somebody's shoe.
Yeah,
that's good.
So we're supposed to get people thinking about it, and in that vein, we're gardeners. Not everybody's a harvester. Every once in a while, we get to reap the harvest, and we get to see and pray with people into the faith, hopefully. But in the meantime, we're gardeners, we're tilling soil, we're planting seeds. And I think if we live like that, we take the pressure off of ourselves, and we allow God to do what God's going to do. And another thing Kokel says that I really like is that we're 100% responsible for what we're supposed to do, and God's 100% responsible for what God's supposed to do. And is that our music?
It's the music.
Oh, wow. Oh, Brock, look what you did. You brought us up to the very, man. Hey, Brock. Hey, Brock, thank you so much for calling. And you were a great guest, and you raised some really good questions. I really would love it if you would call again and ask some more questions, because you're amazing. And gosh, our time is up. I'm not going to get off. I'm going to keep going. Daniel, I'm keeping going. Whoever's on after us is going to have to deal with. No, the guys, hey, if you've been listening, this is apologetics.com radio, and we're just having fun out here. We're challenging believers to think, thinkers to believe. We're live every Friday night, well, Saturday morning, technically at midnight. And my name is John Noyes. I'm here with Harry Edwards, Dr. Leslie Wickman. You should buy her book on Amazon, God of the Big Bang. And Eric Horn, your book's coming out
next year.
Next year, yeah, it's going to be out next century. I don't know when you should write a book.
Sure,
that'd be really fun. So, anyways, hey, guys, I've had a ball. I'm John Noyes, apologetics.com radio. Thanks very much. Bye bye.